Hello, I'm Dave King.
And I'm Alicia Reed. Welcome to Rotary Unscripted, the official podcast of Rotary Magazine for Great Britain and Ireland.
And we're delighted to be back for our February episode, recorded once again from the studios of Swindon 105.5. Thanks, as always, to Dame Shirley and the team.
This month's programme brings together two very different strands of Rotary activity, but all with a shared focus on impact, sustainability and long-term thinking.
And we'll be talking about global fundraising for polio eradication, leadership development for young people here in the UK, and how structured giving helps Rotary plan for the future. And we'll also be having a chat to Jasmine Harrison in the high seas in the South Atlantic.
Different conversations, different perspectives, and plenty to reflect on as Rotary clubs think about where their time, energy, and resources can make the greatest difference.
So our first guests are Suzanne Ray and Mukesh Malhotra, the co-founders of The World's Greatest Meal, an initiative which has helped Rotary clubs and supporters raise millions of pounds for polio eradication through one simple idea: sharing a meal and donating what you might otherwise spend. Now, Suzanne joins us remotely from Brisbane in Australia, where at the time of this recording, it is an ungodly 4 a.m, while Mukesh is safely tucked up back home in London waiting for his supper. So Suzanne and Mukesh, welcome to Rotary Unscripted.
Thank you very much, David.
So starting off to begin with, Suzanne, what is The World's Greatest Meal?
It's an idea to fundraise for polio. So basically, you just have any meal or even a cup of coffee or even don't have a meal and donate what you save, as you said, which is very popular in the UK, but not elsewhere, I might add.
Take us back a decade or so ago. How did it all start?
Well, for myself, the most interesting part was that I was actually there at the Rotary Club of Richmond. I was actually doing a presentation on End Polio Now, my dear friend. She was there all the way from Australia, and at the end, and you know, depending on who you hear it from, the idea came about by, as all good things do, by writing something down on a napkin and sharing that idea and realizing that this could actually work. And can you imagine that from that little idea, we've been able to save, I think I calculated it the other day, because you've got to have two rounds of vaccination, we probably saved more than 50 million children, thanks to all the people around the world, plus the Bill Gates and Melinda Foundation. So they've kind of helped us to make this happen. And a lot of people in Rotary, you know, when we first started, thought, oh, what a, you know, as most people say, is that really an idea? And the funny thing is, 10 years on or more, there are so many organizations who are actually imitating what we do and fundraising for themselves. So I think, as always, we're probably the unsung heroes who started something. It took off. And the next thing you know, the world is there. Suzanne's been the kind of real ambassador to all this. And I call myself the man behind Suzanne. Between the pair of us, we continue to kind of sell, and I think I have to use that word sell, the idea that everybody can make a little difference. And I still think about one of the early events someone did was to take a GPS device and go swimming and have something to eat or drink in the middle of the Pacific Ocean. Another one decided to go mountaineering, set up a little tent on the side of a mountain and enjoy themselves. And I thought, why am I was on holiday, as you do, go to Hong Kong, went up to Victoria Peak. The weather wasn't too wonderful, so my wife and I sat down and we pretended that we had a third person, the third person being the world's greatest meal. And we contributed that to the fund. And just that little bit of extra money probably have saved maybe four or five children just by having a coffee together on Victoria Peak in Hong Kong. That's the kind of fun things we do, David.
Suzanne, you're in Brisbane. Mukesh, you're in London, Rotary Club of Hounslow, 10,000 miles apart. How the heck do you know each other?
I was an avid traveller. I used to go back to the UK to see my grandchildren. And I always went to one club, which was the Rotary Club of Richmond, basically because it was in a very nice place to go. And I used to enjoy going there. And one day Mukesh turned up as the speaker. Now, I'm actually in Cairns, which is about 2,000 kilometres from Brisbane. But I'm in the Brisbane time zone, just to be fussy about it.
So I do apologise. Which Rotary Club are you a member of, by the way, Suzanne?
Rotary Club of Cairns Sunrise. And I've always been in that club, 34 years now.
So Suzanne and Mukesh, what is the most diverse arrangement that you've ever had for a World's Greatest Meal? Has it been online, some sort of digital connection between groups?
There have been so many. You can't really pinpoint any particular one, but I think Suzanne's trip around India on one occasion is probably the most fascinating. And I'll let her explain that one, but she can talk about something else. But for myself, wherever I traveled around the world, there's one great thing about being in Rotary. There'll always be a Rotary club. And if you know enough Rotarians, if you tell them you're coming, guess what? They're going to invite you and they're going to say, can you come and speak to us a little bit about this? And I always say, I'm happy to talk as long as you do me a favor.
Well, we've had quite a lot of online events. One was about 18 months ago and was run from Malaysia. And I think we had about 15 countries taking part. And that was quite interesting. You know, there's been so many. Another great one was the RIBI cruise in Seoul, Korea, organized by Amanda Watkin. And we had John Germ, Eve Conway, quite a few notables on board at the time. And yeah, that was just amazing. We really enjoyed that. There were a lot of people from RIBI who may remember the cruise.
The time when COVID happened, nobody believed that we'd be able to suddenly overnight become e-clubs. And all of a sudden, there we are for two or three years. We're online. We're actually still fundraising during that time, but having virtual birthday parties, right, celebrating clubs, special occasions. And at the same time, those clubs were actually able to contribute to continuing the good work of polio, even though we couldn't do any immunizations during that period because of the kind of issues around COVID. You know, those challenges, you know, us as Rotarians will find a way. As I say, if there is a will, there is a way. And I can assure you that we as Rotarians constantly surprise everybody on what we can do.
We're raising money here for End Polio Now. And I know, Mukesh, you've been to India previously on the immunizations. I know, Suzanne, you've been to Pakistan as well to look at some of the immunizations. Tell me what you found there on your trips to these countries where basically you're giving this gift of life and being able to halt the spread of the poliovirus. What did you find there on your trips to India and Pakistan?
I think the best story I had was I would say that we went glamping. You know, there was a Rotary Club which decided to go out about 3 or 4 hours away from New Delhi. We had like a Victorian environment. A tent was there. I had a punkawala, if you want to call a punkawala, and I had hot water. But then we then had to get in cars to a remote village. And by going to that remote village, I had 12 Icelandic Rotaractors and a grandmother. That's the best story I can give you. And I was assigned to the granddaughter and the grandmother and one other person. And we had a little area. And then we were designated two volunteers with the polio in one of these cool boxes. We literally, on that day, did 125 immunizations. And I thought that was amazing. But the other thing amazing was that we never ran out of children, because what we discovered was that, unlike being in a city, when you're doing vaccination or immunizations in the field, the local grandmothers, they're also the midwives. They're lay midwives. So they knew where all the children were. so that they would bring, so as soon as we were running out, we thought, oh, we've done our day, another couple of children would come along with one of these lay midwives. And we'd do all the necessaries. And there wasn't an issue, which people always think about religion or anything like that. One of the best pictures I have is myself giving the gift of life to a young boy of Islamic background. Now, my family heritage goes back to being a Hindu and a Sikh. And there's this little boy, you know, getting the gift of life. Now, for me, that was great. When we went back to the main base, we had the regional medical officer thanking all of us as foreign dignitaries. And he said, by the way, all of you today, you have done 250,000 immunizations. And I couldn't believe it. And I thought to myself, the population of the borough which I live in, London, is about 500,000 people. And here we have, in one day, we have immunized 250,000 children. You know, that was just, it blew me away. And I felt so kind of, well, I didn't feel, I just felt so proud that my little 125 was absorbed in this, you know, 250,000 children. So that story always comes to my mind. And you are in a rural environment. You have to accept these things. So, but it's great that these things, I can, when I do presentations, just like Suzanne does, we can bring these little personal stories about what the difference of an immunization makes. I'll stop there because I've done a little bit too much and my voice is going.
Suzanne, and your experience in Pakistan?
My first experience was giving polio drops in India, and I was with a DG there, and he said to me, now you said you'd like to do some polio immunizations. We have 24 polio booths in this little town of Salem, and if you go to one, you're going to them all. So that was quite a marathon day, I might add. But my favorite stop was at the railway station, and as the trains came in, the mothers put the children out the window and we vaccinated them, gave them the precious drops, and then whoosh, the train went off again. And that was just fantastic. But it's really hard to encapsulate, you know, I've given polio drops in Africa as well. But Pakistan, you have to understand there the poverty is so great and the security sometimes is not easy. So sometimes you'd be ready to go to a place and to vaccinate children, and you've been told not today. Okay, so we didn't go that day. Other times you would just go, and I found the mothers especially like to give their children to me to vaccinate because they thought it was lucky that I, as a foreigner, would vaccinate their child. And that was very humbling. That's just a little special thing I felt. And there were endless children, as Mukesh said. There are just so many children. You know, there could be 100,000 children, you know, in an immunization drive. Just amazing to somebody who comes from Australia. Our total population is 26 million. And you're double, I know that, or more than double. But, you know, the numbers in Asia are just amazing of children. Children everywhere.
It's this time of year in January that they do the immunizations. And I was in Delhi 5 years ago to do the immunizations there. And the thing that struck me most was what I call the paradox of poverty, that you would be in some swanky hotel 1 minute and driving along to give the immunizations past some neat showroom, car showroom with the latest car. And then you drive into this village. It's poverty that you cannot really imagine. And then you were stopping there with the medical teams and giving out the polio drops. And for me, it's one of the most memorable moments of my life to be able to do that, because what we were doing was really a drop in the ocean. But it was this gift of humanity. It was something intangible. It was a magical moment. In some ways, the poverty was almost forgotten about. It was almost like, here we are to do a job. It was Rotary, and it was Rotary doing something quite commendable and something very different.
And every Rotarian should try and do that, to really understand the polio program, to go to India or Pakistan and give the polio drops. and they'd be very welcome. I know India has more organized tours, but recently some French Rotarians went to Karachi and they did amazing work. Hands off to them. I really admired them for doing that. And it is just so amazing to see the organization that goes on behind the giving of the polio drops. And a huge computer giving by the World Bank. And in real time, you can see the vaccinators are out in the field and they're clicking over the number of vaccinations that they're giving to the children one by one by thousands. And this system helped a lot during COVID. And I'm quite sure you realize how polio helped during COVID. The surveillance system and house to house and the way of making ensuring that people all receive their vaccines is very, very valuable.
So now thinking back now to fundraising to help make all of this vaccination happen, let's say there's somebody who's thinking about doing it. They've never done it before, the World's Greatest Meal project. What would you say is one of the most simple ideas that they could kick that off with?
Having a little polio talk from somebody, or maybe not, but just saying, let's have a collection or let's run a raffle. And it doesn't matter if it's 10 quid, or 20 quid, or I've been at fundraising events in the US where I've raised over $100,000. Everyone becomes a polio eradicator by taking part in the World's Greatest Meal. But our biggest problem is not that people don't have the World's Greatest Meal. They send the money, but they don't tell us about it. If they don't tell us about it, we can't record it. On our current spreadsheet, we're nearly up to 10,000 meals in 87 countries. And that started in 2014, that were the first meals. And the UK made a big difference at that stage. But at this stage, they're not taking part very much.
What we can do is help to bring that idea much more to the UK. And what a great idea it is. It's such a simple concept. And I think, Dave, looking back to some of our previous guests, what I'm noticing is some of the best ideas are the simple ones, aren't they? So if you are a Rotarian or you as a club are even thinking about coming down this route, this wonderful route to help polio eradication, please do visit the website for the World's Greatest Meal, which is wgmeal.org. And thank you both very much. And please do stay with us as we now have coming up Jasmine Harrison. We've spoken to Jasmine before. Jasmine is a 26-year-old Rotarian from Thirsk in North Yorkshire who is sailing around the world in a 19-foot yacht. And she set out from Antigua in the Caribbean last spring and is due to finish the race in March. At the time of this recording, Jasmine was in the middle of the South Atlantic Ocean, having set off from the tiny island of St. Helena in January, bound for Recife. And Dave has managed to catch up with Jasmine, who asked her where exactly she was and how were the sea conditions.
Right now, I am about 400 miles away from St. Helena, 1,200 miles away from Brazil.
What time of day is it as we're speaking to you right now? Because we're recording this at 6 o'clock on a rather cold January evening. What's it like where you are in the middle of the South Atlantic?
I am actually in the same meridian as the UK. Well, maybe Portugal now, but I'm still on the same time zone.
And what can you see around you? Is there anything to see?
Just water, to be honest.
It's been quite a voyage so far since you left Durban to go to St. Helena, and then you left St. Helena.
So I left Durban, went round to Cape Town, left Cape Town to go to St. Helena. That was a two-week passage, and then I had just over a week in St. Helena, and I've already been at sea now for third or fourth days.
While you're in St. Helena, I don't know what possessed you, but you decided to do a little bit of a swim.
Yes, it was a very sort of last minute, on a whim, decided to try and swim around the whole island.
So how far is that?
Well, it's a bit of an unknown, really, because it's meant to be 24 miles.
And this stemmed from a conversation in a bar one night where someone mentioned that no one's ever swum around St. Helena before.
If I was going to do anything, it's going to be more swimming related, because that's what I like to do. And then I said, well, why don't you swim around St. Helena? I said, how far is it? I said, 24 miles. I said, okay, let's go. So I only have costumes with me. Get crew, chocolate and some energy drinks together, goggles, find a tow float, and then just speak to everybody on the island, from fishermen, kayakers, swimmers, divers, all to find out which direction around the island is the best way to go. I was very limited on the date. I mean, some people, if they were going to do that, might go for like a month in the best season and then pick the correct day, whereas I had one day to do it and it had to be that day or not. And so we had some big waves, some strong winds, some strong counter currents all sort of against me, but it was worth a shot. The waves were pretty big, pretty choppy. Seasick. I wasn't physically sick, but I was not very comfortable. I was not very happy. I kind of recovered. The others, I'd lift my head and I could see them being sick over the side of the boat. But he did a really, really good job considering the conditions as well.
And how far did you manage to swim?
So I was in the water for like 19 hours.
Wow.
And I swam 30 miles. I was swimming a lot of the time against counter currents. So we had logged that I did 30 miles. I must have spent about 4 hours total swimming but not moving.
You got to within a mile, really, didn't you, of the finish line, and conditions were really quite bad by then.
I had already got past all the bad bit. It was just my body had already gone through all of the horribleness, and I was then really, really cold. I'd already broken the swimming rule by being hoisted out of the water because there was a shark on the other side.
You got carried to the close to the finish line, but you swam the last bit.
Yeah, I wanted to swim back across the line. Yeah, there was that mile, but actually, like, that mile, you know, it wouldn't have worked just because we'd have been really, really late, and everybody that had been waiting for hours would have not been there. And to be honest, like, I mean, I had zero training at all, not really much prep, and it was just a go-for-it thing. And considering how well it went, I am so happy. It's almost a lesson to myself. Give something a go, even if you're not quite ready. Yeah, I've learned so much, and I'm almost more glad that I did that, and I've got absolutely zero regrets. The hardest physical thing that I've ever had to do was that swim. You know, the sailing around the world is more prolonged days of no sleep and stress and not knowing what to do, whereas the swim, you know, it's difficult, but you just get your head down and you're just very incomparable. But physically, on my body, that is the worst physical condition I think I've ever been in after a sporting event.
You're on your way to Brazil. By the time this podcast comes out, you will hopefully be in Brazil. So basically, what does the next 6 weeks map out for you, from sort of getting to Brazil and then Antigua? How does it all shape up for you?
So from now, I have, I think, about 12 or 13 days until I am in Brazil. And then I will have, again, about 2 weeks there. We have a mass restart. So it's not like St. Helena, where we have exactly 7 days from arrival to departure.
Mm-hmm.
We all leave at the same time on the 19th of February. We then have to, it's probably a very difficult sail, 2,500 miles. We've got to go past the mouth of the Amazon, so avoiding all of the logs. We then have to go past Venezuela, which is quite bad for piracy at the minute. And with everything happening with Trump, there's going to be quite a few warships, and maybe there is going to be some satellite cutoffs as well, some black holes for that. So not ideal. And then we should get to Antigua sometime in March, 7th and the 20th of March. Then we have our presentation in Antigua, and then I am flying home.
And how much are you looking forward to that?
Very much so.
And what's the first thing you're going to do when you get home?
I am going to cuddle my dog.
Jasmine, thank you very much. That is brilliant. Thank you. Good luck from us on the last steps of your voyage. You got enough chocolate?
Oh, I have actually got so much.
I'll let you crack on with the sailing, and I'll speak to you soon, but thank you very much for sparing the time to speak to us on the podcast.
Thanks, bye.
Bye. There you go, the power of technology, bringing you interviews from the middle of the Atlantic Ocean to Swindon.
And our second guest brings us firmly back into the UK. And to something very close to my heart, but Rotary's work with young people and education. Karen Eveley is a member of the Farringdon Rotary Club in Oxfordshire and is closely involved with a Rotary programme called Developing Future Leaders, which is an accredited qualification delivered in schools and colleges, including, very importantly, those supporting learners with special educational needs and disabilities. Karen, welcome to Rotary Unscripted.
Thank you very much. Lovely to be here.
For listeners who may not be familiar with this programme, what would your elevator pitch be?
So within the Rotary Developing Future Leaders programme, we have two courses, both run for young people aged 14 years upwards. They were both developed by Rotarians and Friends of Rotary about 10 years ago. And they can run in both schools and youth groups. And as you said, some run in mainstream schools and some run in schools for children with special educational needs and disabilities. And it's an opportunity for these young people to develop their skills in leadership, management, communications and teamwork. Those are often skills that, or generally skills that students might not have the opportunity to develop through the standard curriculum. They're for both able students, so maybe students who are looking to add to their personal statement for applications to university, but then also suitable for students who might not be studying for GCSEs, might not get many qualifications. It's going really well, but we'd love the opportunity to grow the programme more.
Right, so it sounds a little bit like the Duke of Edinburgh Award, where it would work alongside other education.
My understanding of Duke of Edinburgh is that it's for an individual to develop their own skills, and you might have a physical aspect, a skill aspect, and a volunteering aspect, I think. So I would suggest that the main difference for these two courses is that it's all about teamwork. Communication and teamwork, and can young people work together to come up with their own project idea, to develop a project, deliver the project, review and reflect on how well they worked together. So another a really good skill to have, be able to reflect on your own abilities and the success of a project. It can certainly run alongside Duke of Edinburgh programme, but I think there are quite a few differences as well.
When it comes to the work that is done within special educational needs settings, how is that going?
So there are two schools that have been running it for quite a few years, and the Rotary clubs that work with them and the schools themselves are delighted with the impact that's had on the students' learning and the students' development. We have another alternative education provider, so starting it this term, hopefully. So I've been in touch with them again just this week. So they have a farm outdoor setting where some students might go 2 or 3 days a week who are not able to be in a full-time school setting. So they're going to run it. And then I've been lucky enough to spend this week at a school for children with special education needs as part of my teacher training. And I've had some great conversations with staff there just today, talking to them about how the course could run in their school.
Is it the educational facility that would let the students know, or do the students find out and then ask their facility?
Okay, yes, it's a great question. So it might be the Rotary Club approaches the school or already has a relationship with the school and says to the school, there's this extra programme that you might like to deliver. Or it might be the school or a youth group that finds out about the programme through the national website. We have a page on the Rotary in Britain and Ireland web pages. Because it's teamwork, it's not going to be the individual student who says, I want to do this on my own. Mm-hmm. So each school or group that's delivering it would tend to have 6 students or more. So we want teams of ideally 6, but you can have down to 4 students in a team to run each project. And the course tends to run over 2 terms. We talk about there being 14 hours of sort of delivering the content, some of the theory, and developing the project, and then delivering the project.
What I've noticed myself as an educator is that sometimes the student's enthusiasm or will to achieve a particular goal can really outshine their existing ability and even any qualifications that they may already have. How does that work into what you're doing in the programme?
I guess particularly in a special education needs school, it would be the teacher, the tutor delivering this, who identifies students who would benefit most from the course. Those students might be confident in some areas and less confident in others. They might be in a mixed ability class, as I was observing this week, And it's for the teacher to facilitate those discussions and make sure that everyone gets to have their say. And if they're putting forward ideas for a potential project, the project ideas that are not chosen, that's not a failure on the part of the child. It's learning that you can't do everything. I think that the teachers in SEN schools are particularly well suited to running this type of programme, running this type of course, because they have to be so much more flexible in the way they support their students and run their classes. It's the skill of the teachers to make sure that students aren't losing faith in their ability.
Karen, we know that money is tight in schools. So what's in it for schools and what's in it for Rotary?
So the course costs £90 per student, that's £75 plus VAT per student, whether it's the level one or the level two course. In some cases, the local Rotary Club is paying the full fee. In other cases, it's the school is paying, and then there's a mix in between whether the school and Rotary Club share the cost. The teachers in the school will get the training from the Rotary team, so they're then gaining skills in delivering that course. The teachers and the students get access to get membership of the Institute of Leadership, and so they get access to all the learning resources on that, which could be a fantastic opportunity for the teachers to develop their skills. The level one students may not use their web resources as much, whereas the level two students hopefully would benefit quite a bit from those web resources. And for the Rotary Clubs, it's a great opportunity to work more with young people in the community to build their profile. Maybe there's corporate membership with the schools. There's all sorts of opportunities if a Rotary Club isn't yet engaged with their local school.
And the programme's been going for, I think, about a decade or so, 10 years now.
Yeah.
Is there a good case study? Is there an example, perhaps, that you might care to share about a school and a Rotary Club in partnership?
The two SEN schools that have been running this for a while both work closely with their local Rotary Clubs. One school, Picture Oak School in Redditch, has expanded the course this academic year. So they used to run just a level one course, and they're now running the level two course, and they're delivering it to two classes in that particular school, which is fantastic.
What has the feedback been from schools?
The schools love it. You can see the students love it. So I went along to one assessment day at the Picture Oak School last spring. The enthusiasm of the children was just fantastic. They were delighted to have three Rotarians come in and assess them, and for them to be able to show off and say how much they'd done over the last few months and what amazing projects they'd done working together as a team.
It's not just a monetary contribution from the Rotary Clubs, it's actually personal involvement. So what sort of thing can the Rotarians do to help this programme?
So we would love to have Rotarians join our core team, potentially as assessors, or to help promote the programme across the country more, or across Britain and Ireland more. The Rotarians who want to support their local school or a local youth group running one of these courses may be the people who deliver it. So in some cases, it's the teachers delivering it in school. In other cases, it might be Rotarians delivering it. So there's a great opportunity there. And then also in some cases, we have the Rotarians going in to support the students as they deliver their projects, or develop their projects, so mentoring them, giving them ideas as to how to develop the project. And that there's also the benefit there that students are working with someone who's not their teacher and just gaining experiences from different people.
I suppose it's like every area of Rotary, isn't it? We put in what our strengths are and help to embolden other people with those skills, don't we? So if there's somewhere a club thinking, I'd like to do this, I'd like to get involved, how can you help them get over the line?
Okay, so the easiest way to remember is to go to the Rotary in Great Britain and Ireland website and to go to the youth pages. And on the youth pages, there is a lovely page on the Developing Future Leaders programme, and you can contact us through that.
That's
and
wonderful.
We are then very happy to have a chat with anyone, whether from a school, a youth group or a Rotary Club.
And speaking of the youth, just one more thing on that. Does it help young people to see Rotary in a different way?
I would hope so, yes. If it's a Rotary Club or if it's a school that doesn't already engage with Rotary, and this is a new programme coming in, then yes, I hope those young people have a chance to learn about what Rotary does and to look into the other opportunities, the other youth programs as well.
Thank you for that. Suzanne and Mukesh, I know you were listening to that from afar. Thoughts on education, Rotary and education? We've got a role there, surely, and clearly with polio, that's also education as well. So what are your thoughts on the Developing Future Leaders programme?
My thoughts are that one of the things which we do is, you know, giving mock interviews for youngsters and making it feel like it's a real job interview. With that in mind, it's everything we do within Rotary actually has a single line. You know, you're starting people being interested in Rotary from a young age, and they carry on all the way through. I still remember that, you know, we had a young man, I think he was 21 when he joined Rotary, but he had done his apprenticeship, and somebody had mentioned to him at his one of these mock interviews that they were Rotarians, and that's how he joined Rotary. So planting seeds at this point actually makes a huge difference. That's my personal view. And I think everything what's been mentioned, it makes a tremendous difference that we're one of these organizations. I still say we're probably the world's best kept secret, but we do so much, but no one really remembers us until it comes to a particular point. You know, I think that's me. That's how I feel. But I've been a Rotarian for more than a quarter of a century now. So I used to be a young whippersnapper, and there are still Rotarians who call me a young whippersnapper.
Suzanne, I know you fall into the young whippersnapper category. Thoughts on Rotary and education?
We have Rotary Youth Leadership Awards in Australia, which is a three-day camp. Children go into the camp and learn all sorts of skills, and especially I think the importance of young people, in my opinion, is the confidence to speak, getting along with each other. Rotary Youth Exchange is big and still going on after many years. That's another thing on a very individual basis. So I think it's very important that each Rotary Club is seen to be in some youth program. And we also in our club particularly help some Indigenous children, and we take great pleasure in seeing them advance.
There must be a lot of crossover between what you do in your program and also what Suzanne's talking about there.
Yes, absolutely. So I know lots of districts in Britain and Ireland support RILA, the Rotary Youth Leadership Award. And I was lucky enough to join a RILA programme, 4 or 5 years ago, maybe, for 3 or 4 days. It's a fantastic opportunity, and it went slightly differently in each district. In our particular district that I'm in, it was for 18 to 24-year-olds, I think. It was a one-week residential. It was really difficult, and I think it still is really difficult to recruit young people for some of those programmes. And we hear excuses such as, oh, I don't want a week away, or that's the weekend that the local music festival's on, I have to be at that music festival. Whereas people who take the opportunity to go come back saying that was a life-changing experience, that 1 week experience. So it's a brilliant programme, but for those clubs that can't find people who want to give up that time to get that huge benefit, this type of programme that we can run in schools over a longer period maybe fits some people better. So it's really nice to look at the different programmes alongside each other and for clubs to understand the range of youth programmes and then work out which ones suit their local community.
I'm wondering, Suzanne, when you mentioned earlier that in the UK there's not such a big uptake on the world's greatest meal, is there something that Karen could do to help that perhaps here?
Of course, you know, she's always welcome to introduce it to her club, for one thing, set an example, and then in her little groups, tell the children about polio and, you know, get them to realise that not so long ago, children like, well, I'm 81 now, sorry, a long time ago it seems for the children, that children like me were paralysed and we couldn't walk. And now there's such an amazing thing as all these vaccines and Rotarians around the world that help. And we have been great leaders in advocating, you know, the take up of vaccines and wonderful people like Judith Demont, who is well known in the UK as an advocate almost globally. So she's been amazing. But regarding youth, children are always really interested in what other children have gone through and what other children in other countries are doing. We've had some very successful interact exchanges through World's Greatest Meal. And sometimes they do the purple pinky, where they paint each other's nails with purple paint, nuts or texture or something, nail polish. Depends on the children you're dealing with, Karen. You would know better which is better. But that's a little activity they like. Okay. And maybe they put in a dollar or two and you can say, well, you've helped vaccinate, 5 or 10 children in a country far away. And that leads to geography. And, you can go off onto all sorts of different tangents, can't you, as an educator?
Yeah. Can I just interject and just say, what are the other projects which many clubs deal with young people, and especially when they're going from primary to secondary, is the dictionary project. And I still remember going out and using that as an opportunity to introduce to these children the word polio. Many of them wouldn't have known it, but when they open the dictionary, polio is in there, and explain to them what's happening. But many of their teachers, they didn't even know it themselves. There is a thread which gives people a bit of a passion about what they can do in their community. And the young people, if they're given an opportunity, I've not had the situation where you've described with Ryla. All the Ryla ones we've done, we've been oversubscribed. In fact, the school the following year said, can we have an extra couple of people? It has to be funded. So, that is a challenge. But the children who are, say, going from a West London area, and they're going down to wonderful Surrey and Sussex, and the children, they are kind of different in terms of the environment they're in and what they have out in Surrey and Sussex. So when they come back, they get the real experience of interacting with all of these young people. When we get them to come back to the club and tell us about their experience, they're just gleaming with wanting to tell us how much they enjoyed themselves, and we wish that other children could have had that opportunity. But that's my perspective on Ryla, as well as the dictionary project, which all links in together with young people and getting them to be infused about Rotary, whichever guise you want to say.
And when we talk about youth, we talk about various aspects of Rotary. We've got Interact, which is sort of is in the middle for the secondary school. We've got Rotaract, which is like a bridge between sort of the late teens to the 20s. And right at the bottom end, I suppose, we have Rotakids, which is a scheme to promote Rotary in schools. And I know, Karen, you did some work with a Rotakids club in Oxfordshire.
Yes, I'm lucky enough to run our club's Rotakids club. So Farringdon Rotakids is not, so most Rotary Kids clubs, I think, in Britain and Ireland are run through schools, and ours is not. So we run our club ourselves, so 5:30 till 6:30 on a Tuesday evening in the centre of town, in the town hall, and it's fantastic fun. It's possibly less formal than other Rotary Kids clubs, so I know a big part of Rotary Kids is about getting a club president and a club secretary, and getting the children themselves to think of their fundraising ideas. That's not quite how our club works, but loads of enthusiasm. And as Suzanne said, the children do want to learn what's going on elsewhere in the world, and they are really interested, and they remember when we talk to them about polio. And it's fantastic when you talk to them about it a few months later, that how much they've remembered about the polio story, which is I love. And the support that we give, we have a couple of projects with our Rotary Kids supporting children in Ukraine, and the enthusiasm with which they do that as well is fantastic.
Yeah, your Ukraine projects have been really impressive. Do you just want to quickly describe some of the projects that you've done? You did some over Christmas, and you've done some throughout the year, because you've got some good partnerships with Ukrainian families living here in the UK.
Yes. So our club supports and partners with Kharkiv City Rotary. So in the east of Ukraine, I got text messages or WhatsApp messages just today to say that they'd received the parcels that we sent, that I had intended to send before Christmas, but they're late Christmas presents. So our Rotary Kids decorated tote bags with Christmas decorations and packed up gifts. And we sent those over, and they will be for children who are supported by the Children of Heroes project, which is run, I believe, in a few Ukrainian cities by lots of Rotary clubs. So that's great to support that. And so we'll get photos when the children there receive them, and our Rotary kids will then see who's benefited from their support. And then our club and other clubs across Britain and Ireland also send funds for the Rotary Children of Heroes project for them to buy laptops. So our club has sent quite a few thousand pounds over the last couple of years, and they're able to refurbish laptops and give laptops to the children. And again, we get fantastic little videos that get sent back in WhatsApp from the children saying thank you very much for these, and it's got a Farringdon Rotary label on it, or the other club in the country. So yeah, it's lovely.
I think one other thread besides Dave was saying earlier about things being simple, ideas being simple and working, something else I notice as we get different guests in is that there isn't just one way of doing things. Something that comes to mind for you, that perhaps you started out going in one direction, perhaps a traditional idea, but you had to work around things to actually just make it work in this situation, perhaps like in Ukraine.
The way we've supported or partnered with the Kharkiv City Rotary Club, our club and many clubs across Britain and Ireland were doing a lot to support Ukraine just after the full-scale invasion. And then as I met Ukrainians who had moved to Oxford and the Oxford area and became friends with, very good friends with some Ukrainians, they've then been able to tell me about projects, or I've spoken with them about the projects that we're supporting. And it's just all these different links that come through. So fantastic friendships, really good links.
When people ask us who we are, we tell them we're problem solvers, opportunity creators, and change makers. We are Rotary. Around the world, our network of 1.4 million neighbors, friends, and leaders volunteer their skills and resources to solve issues and address community needs. Take action with us. Find out more at rotary.org/action.
Just let me ask one sort of final round-robin question and get Mukesh and Suzanne and Karen on this one. So we started by talking about the world's greatest meal. Suzanne, if you had to cook one meal, your world's greatest meal, your meal to impress, what would it be?
I think coming from Cairns in far north Queensland, I'd have to cook you a seafood feast.
What would be in seafood feast?
Prawns, lobsters, oysters, and I would also make a fabulous salad.
And Mukesh, what would be your signature meal?
Well, I'm not wonderful at cooking, I can assure you. But the only thing which I am reasonably good at is to make a veggie pasta. So I'd make the tomato sauce in my own unique style. I'll have the pasta made and then make the vegetables. If I've got to feed my grandchildren, I would have probably whisked the veggies into the tomato paste so that they don't spot them. And they will just down the pasta without any problem. I can't kind of say I can make the best barbecue or anything like that. I'll be happy with just doing a simple pasta and making my own tomato sauce base. We'll have a bit of zing.
And Karen, in the kitchen, are you Delia or Delilah?
Okay, I'm going to go carb heavy since we're in the middle of winter. And I'm going to say ham, chicken and apricot pie, roast potatoes, followed by bread and butter pudding with custard.
And Alicia, from Cornwall, what would be the Cornish delight?
Well, personally, as someone who is congratulated when I don't burn something, it would be a simple jacket potato.
And Shirley, at the controls, what would be your meal of choice?
Gosh, I love food. I think I'll make you pork belly in cream and bananas with green peppers.
Wow.
Sounds good. All right, that Dave, what about good. You?
Beans on toast.
Takes us back a few years.
And so, as the studio clock reminds us with metronome-like insistence, who's really in charge, we tick off yet another episode of Unscripted.
Suzanne Ray, Mukesh Malhotra, Karen Evely, and to Jasmine Harrison for some thoughtful and wide-ranging conversations. You can find this and previous episodes of Rotary Unscripted via the Rotary Magazine's digital platforms, where we explore the people, projects and ideas that are shaping Rotary today. For March's episode, we will be focusing on 4 years of war in Ukraine, with a number of guests joining us from Odessa and Lviv to explain what is life like living under siege and how Rotary is making a difference. Just before we go, Mukesh, February the 23rd, it's Rotary Day, and clearly that's a great opportunity for Rotarians to share the world's greatest meal.
That whole week will be an exciting period of time, and it'll be good for Rotarians to remember the work we have done and the keeping the promise to the children of the world that we will end polio now. Every contribution and every cent makes a big difference to our kind of challenge which we've given ourselves, and we're nearly there.
Thank you, Mukesh. And Suzanne, thank you for joining us tonight.
Pleasure. I'll go to bed now.
And our thanks, as ever, to the brilliant team here at Swindon 105.5 and to you, the listeners.
You've been listening to Unscripted, the official podcast for Rotary in Great Britain and Ireland. If you'd like to find out more about Rotary or join us, visit rotarygbi.org. You can also read more stories in the Rotary magazine at magazine.rotarygbi.org. If you've enjoyed this podcast, then why not leave a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts? It helps to spread the word. And we'd love you to share this podcast with friends, family, and colleagues inside and outside of Rotary. You can also email comments or suggestions to editor@rotarygbi.org. This podcast has been recorded at the studios of Swindon 105.5.